Ladies and gentlemen, first of all, a huge thanks to all of you for making the effort to come here today to attend this public meeting for the by-election of Howden and Holton Price. Many of you will have been hearing what David Icke has had to say, both in the past and in the recent couple of weeks, since a great deal of what he's had to say has been supposedly covered in the British press and the British media. We know that that is an absolute farce. Ladies and gentlemen, today, for the first time, you're going to hear from himself exactly what he is saying. Ladies and gentlemen, please put your hands together and give a warm welcome for Mr. David Icke.
Thank you very much. The situations I get myself into, I'm watching the telly a few days ago and now I'm standing here, it's my life. There's people here from the constituency where this election's taking place, and there's people I know have come from long distances who've been looking at my stuff for a while. So there's a mixture of, what is madman talking about? And people who think, well, maybe it's not quite as mad as you think it is. This event today is going to be videoed, it is videoed, at the back there, and it's going out on the internet for free in the next few days, and please send it everywhere you can so we can get this information out. And for people who watch this video around the world, just a quick bit of background. Short while ago, the Member of Parliament for this constituency, called David Davis, who was the Home Affairs spokesman for the opposition Conservative Party, resigned in protest at the Labour government bringing in the Big Brother state. And he's standing for re-election on the issue of Big Brother. That's where I came in. I was going to leave this election alone. I never stood for election before. I never stand for election again. Because it's on the Big Brother issue, I was interested. I was going to leave it alone had the Labour Party, the government party, stood against him. But they chose not to. They said this election was a farce. Now, when you put that through the translation unit, it reads, we'll say it's a farce so we don't have to stand, because if we do stand, we'll get slaughtered because people are sick of this Big Brother state. The third party, the Liberal Democrats, chose not to stand because they said they supported the stand of David Davis. And David Davis was saying he wanted a debate on the gathering Big Brother state in Britain. So I'm sitting there watching the telly, not that much more than a week ago. And I thought, okay, I'll give him a debate, because no one else seemed to be going to do it. So I stood for this election, not wanting to win. Oh my God. The thought of being an MP, I go all of a quiver, like, this cold kind of thing goes down my spine. Not least because I don't want to enter that den of iniquity and corruption and mendacity, but also because increasingly, and this is a big part of the Big Brother state, it's irrelevant. 75-80% of the laws now originate in this country from the European Union, and a massive chunk of the rest, they don't even get debated in Parliament. They go in through things called standing orders or devolved powers. They're just introduced. Where does one come from? Who decided it? Thousands of laws come in every year like that. No debate.
Parliament's irrelevance. Increasingly an irrelevance. But the reason I stood was because over the last nearly 20 years, I've been investigating full-time in now 45 countries an agenda to create, no, not a Big Brother state in Britain, a global Big Brother state in which Britain is part of it. And I wanted to widen the debate in this election from it's just the Labour government, authoritarian and arrogant, bringing in the Big Brother state.
if only. And I wanted to point out nearly 20 years of research in book after book after book after book of great detail, source detail, predicting, not because I'm a prophet and I'm sitting in a darkened room smoking some weed, bringing it out of the ether, from hard journalistic research, because that's what I used to be, a journalist that was edited, now I'm a journalist that not, there's a big difference. Pointing out what the agenda was and how they were going to manipulate, what techniques they were going to use to manipulate this agenda into place. The reason enormous numbers of people worldwide are now coming to my work suddenly over the last few years is very, very simple. What is in these books is now in our daily experience. And I wanted to bring this to this debate that David Davis said he wanted, so we could look at the bigger picture of Big Brother and not just the limited view where we are focusing on the oil rag and missing the engineer. We have not had that debate because he won't have it with me. I tried to go to his public meeting with Geldof, Bob Geldof, the other day. I was turned away at the door by this man. I had a ticket booked. It was all arranged. No problem. It's a public meeting. As long as you had a ticket, I had a ticket. And then this man who, kind of this vision appeared out of the ether, reminding me immediately of a pound of lard with a shirt on, I remember, who has obviously been consuming large amounts of E-numbers, because this man was hyper, and told me suddenly, miraculously, abracadabra, it was now a private event. 30 seconds ago, it was a public. What happened there? So I couldn't get in. So that is the background. And I came here, you see, less than a week ago, I came up here to stay last Monday. Not to challenge David Davis, but to share information with the people here and him of the bigger picture. I was not saying I'm here to challenge David. I was saying I just want some information. If I get zero votes, I couldn't give a shite. It's of no interest to me who votes for me. It's of interest for me that people have access to information that they're not normally getting, and then they make of it what they will. Fair enough, I'm off. But at least they've heard it. And I was saying, you know, I commend him for standing and all the rest of it. You know, good of you. Anything gets Big Brother out there, I'm for. After a few days here, you know, in the midst of it, I'm starting to see a different picture. And I'll come to that as we go through. But before that, we've got to have some background information to put that into context. The thing is about this Big Brother state, see, is that it's happening in country after country after country after country. I had a German film crew come see me a few days ago when I was at home. They were going on about the Big Brother state being introduced in Germany. It's happening on an outrageous scale in America, in Canada, in Australia, in Europe. Now, is Gordon Brown, the Labour Prime Minister, responsible for all that? No, of course not. So what and who is? Unless you are a coincidence theorist. I love them. They're sponsored by Naivety Anonymous, by the way. Who believe that this is all happening by accident. Good luck to them. Free country, we hope. Free world, we hope. You're right, chi of you. But don't tell me it's happening by accident and then tell me there is absolutely no credibility in anyone saying, actually, maybe it's not. Gandhi said, an error does not become truth by reason of multiplied propagation, nor does truth become error because no one will see it. What is, whether you think it is or whether you think it's not, it still is. And we constantly confuse the limits of our own perception of what is possible with what is actually possible. And because we do that, we reject by reflex action things that are put forward, not because They can't be supported, but because they're outside of our limit of sense of possibility. I did a news conference the other day. Some journalists came along, and including a guy called Quentin Letts from the Daily Mail. Poor old Quentin. He thinks he's a journalist, bless him. And he heard a cut down, but still substantial version of what I'm going to do today. And he then says in his newspaper, he does a real cut down version of the cut down version and basically, you know, said nothing. But then he said after it, all nonsense, of course. Now, Quentin, I'd like to be a journalist, but I'm stuck with what I am. Let's has no idea whatsoever if what I'm saying is true. Why? Because he's not done 30 seconds of research, like all these other journalists, into what I'm saying. But Quentin Letts, limits of possibility. Out here, anything out here, nonsense by reflex action, no research necessary. And this is how it works all the time. Gandhi again, even if you are in a minority of one, the truth is still the truth. And I am no longer in a minority of one. Nothing like it. Yeah. Remember this? This is when, centuries ago, Quentin Letts and his ilk would have reported that anyone who said the earth was round was mad because it's nonsense, of course. Because, as everyone knows that, if it was not possible to be round, people would fall off the bottom and all the rest of it that you got with the sphere earth is ridiculous. And we are now facing another version of the earth is not flat with what I'm talking about today. Mark Twain, in religion and politics, people's beliefs and convictions are in almost every case gotten at second hand. And without examination from authorities who have not themselves examined the questions at issue, but have taken them at second hand from other non-examiners whose opinions about them were not worth a brass farthing. That's where we get, everyone knows that, mate. That's where we get official history from. Summed up by Einstein. Condemnation without investigation is the height of ignorance. And on that, yeah. And on that criteria, we live in a world that is at the summit of Everest in terms of the height of ignorance. Everyone knows that, mate. Nonsense, of course. The world looks bewildering. All these different things have what's going on? Why are they doing that? That's stupid. That's bureaucratic incompetence. What's happening? Why do they do that? It's ridiculous. They did it that way. It'd be much better. What's going on? And more people are saying and feeling more and more ill at ease with the world as it's changing around them. When we've got to the point of people being fined by the authorities for putting a card in their own car saying it's for sale. And when they park it in a street, they're being fined for trading in the street. When people are being fined for putting out their wheelie bin on the wrong day, we're talking about the fine detail of our lives that this has got into now. The key thing to start to understand the world we're actually looking at, as opposed to the one we think we are, is to connect the dots. There are many various and vastly different areas of our lives. Vastly different areas of politics and business and banking and all the rest of it. And left to themselves as dots, it's bewildering. I don't understand that. Why are they doing that? Why all that stuff? But when you start to connect the dots, and that's what I've been doing for the last nearly 20 years, and to connect the dots, you have to do enormous research on the dots themselves before you can start to connect them. It's an enormous work. That's why it's very difficult for people to see what's happening, because the amount of work it needs to actually uncover it. And as you connect the dots, the picture starts to appear. You start to see that organizations and people and events that appeared to be totally unconnected are actually fundamentally connected. And you start to realize and you start to see a clearer and clearer picture of what Big Brother really is and why. You start to see the elephant in the living room. You see, the difference between those who've not looked at this stuff and those that have is the difference between seeing that's why they're doing this and people saying they're doing this, I think, because what they're telling us they're doing it for. Once you connect the dots, you start to see the white bits between the words where the real information is. And this elephant in the living room is that there is a secret agenda going on in the shadows behind the people that appear to be in power. And this agenda, as I've been exposing, like I say, for nearly two decades, before anyone was talking about this stuff, that secret agenda is to create a global, centralized, fascist dictatorship, where they want to take the European Union, and are doing it at a rate of knots at this time, take that structure globally, and that's what you have in terms of the structure they want. Now, to hide the agenda and to justify its introduction, we have the movie, as I call it. This is the version of events that we are given through the mainstream media and from politicians and stuff, most of whom, the vast majority of whom, haven't got a clue what they're actually reporting. They just read autocue or take a government statement and regurgitate it and call it news and journalism. And so, if you want to centralize power in Europe, because you want that to be another layer, and I'll come to that in a minute, of this global fascist dictatorship, then that's the secret agenda. Within the movie, you say, no, it's just a tidying up exercise to make Europe more efficient. No, it's not the Constitution, it's a treaty. Even though it's exactly the same virtually as the Constitution, it's a treaty, so we don't need a referendum on it, so that people can say no. This is how it works. Secret agenda, movie provides the excuse for the agenda. This is the uniform, it seems to be all over the world, the dark suit. The dark suit. And these people are promoted, prime ministers, presidents, as being the leaders of the world, the people who are making the decisions. If anyone thinks Bush has been running America, I've got some seafront property in Switzerland you might like to look at. I've got a picture. The dark suits are the here today, gone tomorrow politicians who are the vehicles for introducing the agenda decided in the shadows, and those shadows people do not change, or at least those that control the shadow people do not change. As they say in America, those enormous numbers of people in America are now starting to understand this. They say, whoever you vote for, the government still gets in. And what they mean by that is those that control governments of any persuasion get in. In the shadows, this is where it's done. Look for the think tanks, which is a massive vehicle for this manipulation in the background. These people are cardboard cutouts. They do a job for a while. Some of them know they're doing a job in relation to the shadow people. Lots of them don't. They're just manipulated to bring in certain policies by the networks around them. I mean, have you met a lot of these people? You know, not a lot of brain cell activity in some of these politicians, right? Piece of cake to use them to bring things through. What has Bush done for the last nearly 8 years? Signed things. Hasn't decided what's being signed, he's just bloody signed it. Now, because of people like me and other people all across the internet and through other means, books and stuff, it's, and never mind that, daily experience now, it's becoming clearer and more obvious that there is a elite that is deciding the direction that this world and our lives is going. And one of those insiders on the peripheral of the inside, David Rothkopf, wrote this book recently. It's called Superclass. He is a scholar at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, a think tank in America that was exposed by a congressional investigation in the 50s by something called the Rees Committee. It was exposed, this international peace organization was exposed for manipulating war, particularly the First World War, and they got that from the minutes of the organization. He's also a former director of a notorious organization that's in my books right the way through, called Kissinger Associates, which was set up by Henry Kissinger along with a co-founder called Lord Carrington, you might have heard of, foreign secretary at the time of the Falklands War in this country, in the Thatcher administration. But what he says, having, you know, fallback position, we can't keep denying it, fallback position, yes, an elite is deciding the direction of the world, but it's kind of a loose thing, and it's just kind of happening. Bullshit. It's coldly calculated if you go high enough, and I'll get into that. So, this is where the action is, behind the scenes. And it's a network of bloodlines. I can't go into this too much because of time. I want to focus on what this election's about, but just a little bit of background. There were bloodlines out of the ancient world. They were the royal bloodlines. They were considered special and all the rest of it, that came out of the ancient world, which are overwhelmingly pulling the strings within this elite, some of the ancient advanced civilizations, but particularly one keeps coming to light, what we once called Sumer, which historians call the cradle of civilization. I would question that, but that's what they say. And later it was called Babylon. Now this land is of great historical significance to this network of interbreeding bloodlines, and it is called today Iraq. Yes, the Iraq thing was about oil, but not only. Yes, it was about many things, but not only. But it was also about the historical significance of this land known as Mesopotamia, the land between two rivers, in terms of the people who were orchestrating the invasion of Iraq. And these bloodlines moved out, became the force behind the Roman Empire, moved up into Northern Europe, became the aristocracy and royal bloodlines of Europe. And when people started then, the people in general, started resisting this overt, in-your-face royal dictatorship, where they could see where the control was, these bloodlines started moving. Still some stayed in the official royal state, but most of them moved out of that into what I call the dark suit professions. This is why when you look at the genealogy of American presidents since Washington, which has been done by people like the Boston Historical Genealogical Society and stuff, the number of presidents that lock in to the royal and aristocratic establishment of Europe is staggering. In the land where anyone could become president. What's that? More bullshit. Thank you very much. The real expansion of this network came with what we called colonial rule, where the British Empire, what did they say? They said the sun never set on the British Empire, so big was it. But not just the British Empire, that was the prime one, mind. Also the French and others. And these bloodlines were exported all over the world as these European powers colonized the world. And then we had this sleight of hand called independence for these former colonies. Now, there's two basic types of dictatorship. There's a dictatorship you can see, touch and taste. Communism, fascism, apartheid. The people under those dictatorships know where they stand. They can see the controllers, they know they're controlled. That kind of control has a finite life because people can see what the situation is. It might take some time, but eventually the desire for freedom in the human heart will rebel against that. The greatest form of dictatorship is a dictatorship you can't see, touch and taste, that goes under cover stories like democracy and freedom. And people will sit in one of those dictatorships forever until someone or something points out what the game is. It's in simple terms, symbolic terms, not even symbolic, it's how it is. It's sitting in a prison when you can't see the bars, where you think that you're free because you can put a cross on an irrelevant piece of paper every 4 or 5 years to elect in different masks on the same face to continue the same agenda the last lot did. We're free, honey. That is the greatest form of dictatorship, because people do not rebel against not being free when they think they are. And what happened at what we call independence for the former colonies is they moved from a dictatorship that the colonies could see, rule from Britain or whatever, to a covert dictatorship. What they did, they left the bloodline out there and the secret society network that manipulates the bloodline into power and its agents and gophers into power. And they've gone on controlling those countries ever since, while the people in those countries think they're free and their own government is in control. So what we have is like a transnational corporation. And the center of it, at operational level anyway, is in Europe. So a transnational corporation has a headquarters, and then it has subsidiaries in all the different countries. The headquarters dictates the policy which the subsidiaries then have to introduce and carry out. That's how this works. And that's how they are able to introduce the same changes, the same Orwellian transformation in countries all over the world at the same time. Because these subsidiary networks of secret societies and semi-secret groups and other groups that interface between that and the public society, their role is to get control of their country's political system, economic system, media ownership system, and therefore move that country in line with the centrally dictated agenda. Now, this is what I wanted to talk about at this election. Not just, although it's important, DNA databases and surveillance cameras. That is one important yes. But it's an expression of this agenda. It's not it. And if we get caught in that, then we're never going to stop the jackboots in dark suits from completing their agenda. And that's what it is, to enslave humanity globally in ways that I'll come to. So this network operates the secret agenda and then finds the excuses within the movie, our daily experience, to justify the agenda being introduced. And what they do, therefore, is manipulate both sides in the various situations they want to manipulate. Why? They want, symbolically, to know the outcome of the football match before the kickoff. They're not interested in states of flux and uncallable situations. They want to know what the score's going to be before the teams have left the dressing room. Now, if you control one side, you are going to influence the football match. You're not going to control the outcome. To control the outcome, you have to control both sides. And that's why, when you're investigating this, you don't just look at the fors or against something, which is in line with the agenda. You look at those who are on the other side of the debate, because they want to control the debate by controlling them. And by controlling the debate, they control the outcome. So, example. The Bush family and the Clinton family are supposed to be opposing each other politically, because one's a Democrat and one's a Republican. Why then, as I've exposed in my books and people who knew them have exposed from their own experience, that these families are like that and go back a long, long time. During the Reagan Father Bush administration, the Bush family and the Clinton family, Clinton was then governor of Arkansas, were running drugs, a massive operation, through somewhere called the MENA airstrip in Arkansas, which was part of the Iran-Contra thing. They go back a very long way. From 1980, when Reagan Bush came in and Father Bush was the real president in terms of power, right through to now, in 2008, a Bush or a Clinton has been in the presidency. And they are two masks on the same face. The president is a puppet controlled by the forces that put him there, that funded him there with the cuckoo amounts of money they give. Cheney's more powerful in the White House than boy George Bush. Why? Because Cheney's higher in the hidden hierarchy. And this is the point. The higher you are in the hidden hierarchy doesn't translate necessarily to the hierarchy we see in the public arena with presidents and vice presidents. But the power hierarchy in the public arena does mirror the power hierarchy in the hidden agenda. This man has been president. This man's been running America. Our enemies are innovative and resourceful, and so are we. They never stop thinking about new ways to harm our country and our people, and neither do we. So if he's not been running America, who has? And then, this is another way where the debate kind of diverts people. I've been hearing for the last 8 years before Blair left office, Bush controls Blair. Bush can't tie his shoelaces without help. Bush controls Blair. No, no. The reason Blair has not been able to cough without asking through his period in office before Brown took over is because the same shadow people have been controlling Bush as have been controlling Blair, and that's why you can't get a cigarette paper between their policies and their actions. Nothing to do with Bush control. Bush controlling Blair, he can't control himself. And now, Hillary Clinton, John McCain, Barack Obama stands for change you can believe in. These people are controlled by the same force. Interesting, you know, when Clinton came in, Bill Clinton in, what, 92, he kept talking all the way through his election campaign, change, I stand for change. He's going on, Obama, change, I stand for change. Why? Why do they play that game? Interesting. Because of the way the system stitches up people, denies them choice, denies them equilibrium, happiness, and all these things, and what they desire, at any point in time, the vast majority of people are not happy with their status quo. So anyone who comes along and says, I stand for change, oh yeah, anything's better than this, yes mate, change. Very powerful because of that situation. Now Barack Obama, his main man, and it's not just in this election, it goes back a long time, is a guy called Zbigniew Brzezinski. Brzezinski was the national security advisor in the Carter administration, And he went public in the last year, 18 months or so, admitting that he, in that position, worked to manipulate the Soviet Union to invade Afghanistan because he wanted to weaken the superpower, and in his words, to the effect of, I wanted to create for them their Vietnam. It didn't matter that he did that, except that that invasion cost 1 million Afghan lives. It matters nothing to these people. They don't have empathy with the consequences of their actions for others like we have empathy. Empathy is a fail-safe mechanism for human behavior. Take it away and there are no limits. And as a result of that invasion, he and those that followed him in the Reagan-Bush administration and British military organizations too, trained tens of thousands of people in Pakistan, where the intelligence agency, the ISI, is the CIA Pakistan branch, to fight the invasion and resist it, to cause the Russians as much problem as possible. They are the people they're now saying we have to take our freedoms away to stop them harming us. The people they trained, not just in Pakistan, but also in America. I'll say no more except this about this. Well, I might, because I've got verbal diarrhea, but if anyone thinks, David Davis or anybody else, that when this guy, David Cameron, the Conservative leader, comes into government, as we stand, he absolutely is almost certain to do. If David Davis or anyone thinks that Big Brother is going to be turned back by this guy and his cohorts, then again, you know, just down the road from the one in seafront property in Switzerland, I have another little one you might like to look at. Because the agenda does not take no for an answer. You always know when it's the agenda, because when it's rejected by the people, they keep coming back with it. And this whole global Big Brother agenda is not going to go any further in Britain, or is going to be turned back by David Cameron. Crikey, you're having a laugh. Of course not. They'll find the excuses for it and it'll be business as bloody usual. This is very true, I find. Politics may not be the oldest profession, but the results are the same. Now, people don't realize just how simple it is for these shadow groups, a group in the end, to manipulate who goes into government in a democracy. Piece of cake. This is how it's done. You might recognize this if you've followed politics in Britain for the last 20 or 30 years. Most countries have one or two two parties, sometimes one, South Africa, but mostly two parties that have any chance of forming a government. All you have to do to get the party in, i.e., because it's not a party thing, they're just vehicles, in other words, the leadership in that you want, is to cause mayhem in the party you don't want. And then people say, well, I don't really want to vote for these people, but look, what's the alternative? Go and vote for them. Oh, they're in. During the Thatcher era, there was lots of people who didn't want to vote for Margaret Thatcher. But look at the Labour Party. It was in disarray. It was internal conflict. Leaders came to power who you wouldn't let run a fish and chip shop. And people were saying, oh, I don't want Margaret Thatcher, but look at the alternative. So the Conservatives were in right the way through the 80s when she introduced Thatcherism, which was a mirror of the economics called Reaganomics that was being introduced at the same time in America. Just a coincidence, nothing to worry about. Then the chosen one appeared through the ether, Tony Blair, after John Major had become Prime Minister. The moment Chosen One Blair came to lead the Labour Party, Murdoch's newspapers in this country switched to the Labour Party and Blair for the first time. And what happened to the Conservative Party? Internal conflict, mayhem, leaders that people didn't find credible, and leaders who were, the public were told not to find credible. What happened? 10 years of Blair. Despite lying blatantly, outrageously, grotesquely about going into Iraq. And despite all that, he got in, what, three times? What were people saying? Well, I don't like Blair, but look at the alternative. And now Gordon Brown's come in to replace Blair without a vote. Blair stepped down. What's happening to Brown now? A systematic demolition of him and his party is happening. Why? Because Cameron is designed to come in with his cohorts to take the Big Brother state on a bit further. Sorry, David Davis, you're going to have to live with it. Unless we decide we're not going to live with it, because the power is with us, not them, if we only took it. So the world seems very confusing. Let's see how they do it here. The world seems very confusing, a ball of confusion and what's going on. And the reason it seems like that is because we're denied, not least through the Quentin Letts of this world, we are denied the coordinates necessary to understand how the pieces fit. The coordinates are about where they want to take the world and the methods they use to take us there. Once we've got these coordinates, the world looks very different. This election looks very different. Coordinate one. The goal is a centrally controlled global fascist dictatorship. This image can be found in this book, the first edition of which I wrote in 1994. Look at the world as it's emerged since in relation to that. Why do they want this structure? Any dictatorship must centralize power and must bring the decision-making process into the hands of fewer and fewer people. Because the more diversity of decision-making you have, the less control a center is going to have over those decisions. Diversity is the worst nightmare of the dictator. Uniformity is the means through which they do it. I mean, just look at the world from a built environment perspective. No matter where you go in the world, it all looks the same. This uniformity is emerging, even on that level. So what they want is a world government which would dictate all major policies to every country. They want a world central bank that would control the whole of global finance for every country. They want a world currency which would not in the end be physical cash, but electronic money only. And there are fundamental implications for freedom in that. We are hurtling towards the cashless society. Oh, it's a good thing. Yes. If it was done benignly, it might be, but it ain't. It's the outcome and the reason for the outcome we need to focus on, not the actual thing itself necessarily so much. Today, if you go into a shop or whatever and you hand over electronic money, a credit card, and they say, sorry, the computer won't accept your card, at least you can still say, oh, well, I'll pay cash then. What happens when there is no cash? And that computer says, no way, Jose. You have no means of purchase. What does that mean? Total control. That's why it's there. They want a world army. And what I'm saying is all in these books from 15, nearly 20 years ago. A world army that would impose the will of the world government. I had a journalist said to me once, what would they want a world army for? There'd be no one to fight. I said, you're a journalist, aren't you? The people to fight would be any group, any nation that did not want to give over the total control of their lives to the decisions of the world government. And I say in these early books, watch for the development of a European army. This is what Sarkozy is suggesting now, the French leader. And watch for excuses being made for NATO troops to operate outside their official designated area of the North Atlantic. They're now in Afghanistan. And the idea is to fuse all that stuff with the UN peacekeeping force to create by stealth the world army. And they want a microchipped population connected to a global computer, and in the end, every child microchipped at birth as a matter of course. When I first said this 15, 20 years ago, people thought it was hilarious. Anyone who looks at what's happening in the world now has got the grin, as my mother used to say, on the other side of their face, because microchips are now being introduced and are being all the time encouraged for us to take them as a way of operating. They bring it in, first of all, through, you know, microchip Fido, you'll never lose your dog again. And then microchip your child, you never lose your child again. Microchip yourself, you'll never lose yourself again. There you go. Under this, they want four super states. The first one is the European Union, which is the most advanced, came out of the EEC, the Common Market, a free trade area, nothing to worry about. The American Union, which they are manipulating out of a free trade area called NAFTA, North America Free Trade Association. And the first step of that, and it's so close to becoming public, is something called the North American Union, Canada, Mexico, and the United States, and they even have their a name for the currency to replace the dollar. It's called the Amero. They want a Asia-Pacific Union, which they're now talking about, being evolved out of another free trade area. If it works, why change it? Called APEC, Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation. And we already now have an ever more active African Union, which came out of the Organization of African Unity. That's what they want. And where are we? Down here. Try getting power over your life sitting under that edifice of bureaucratic control. ID cards, stepping stone. This is what they want. Microchipped people. I was, by the way, I said on the internet I was going to talk for an hour and a half. I ain't. I hope that's all right with you. Anyway, I was approached by a third party in about 97 to meet a CIA scientist who was an expert in magnetics. And I met him in his home. And he said he wanted to meet me because he wanted to get out what was going on, and he had no way of doing that for reasons that will become clear. He said that he joined the CIA to serve his country because of the way that these organizations are compartmentalized, as I'll come to. Most people in these organizations are not trying to follow this agenda at all. They're victims of it. So he told me many, many things. What had happened is he joined the CIA thinking he was serving his country. And when he got on the inside in these secret scientific projects, which produced technology far and away beyond anything we see in the public arena, he realized that this agenda that I'm talking about today was happening, which he never had a clue about when he joined the CIA. And he resisted and refused to work with them. He said one day he left home and he has missing time, remembers nothing until he woke up on a medical type bench in a room. And as he got his faculties back, he found there was something stuck to his chest. And he was opening his shirt as he told me this story. And on his chest was a see-through, that's all I can describe it as, a see-through shampoo sachet type thing, and inside was this orangey golden liquid. These are known within the CIA as patches. Someone's been patched. And what had happened in that missing time period is that his body had been manipulated to need the drug in the patch to survive, and if he doesn't get it, he starts to die of agonizing death. He knows that's true because he resisted after he was patched and he found out they weren't kidding. These patches have to be replaced every 72 hours, and if they're not replaced, goodbye to him. So he's got children. I met them. He doesn't want to die. So what does he do? He serves the agenda. Because he hasn't got a choice, he feels, except to die. And this man said this to me after telling me so much other stuff. Tell people, if they say no to just one thing, say no to the microchip. Because he said, even those that are becoming aware of it, and this is way back, this is like I say, 97, and some were, most weren't, think it's about electronic tagging. And on one level he said it is. He said, but the real reason for microchipping is because once you've got a microchip inside you, you can be electronically connected to a computer system that can manipulate you physically, take you out from a distance, that can manipulate you emotionally, because the body's an electrochemical entity. You get hold of the body, access the body chemically or electrically, you can do mayhem. And when we feel emotion or think, it is an electrochemical process. So if you get a microchip inside you manipulating that process, they can manipulate the way you think. They, as he said, they can make people aggressive, they can make people docile, either as an individual or en masse. You basically become a robot, he was saying. Say no to the microchip. And this, I've really heard David Davis talk too much about this. Maybe I missed it. It's what Orwell's 1984 was talking about. I even named the microchip, it's called the Verichip, although this is one of the less sophisticated ones that they're introducing in parts of situations in America. The CIA scientist told me in 1997, when no one was talking about nanotechnology, that the microchips outside of the public arena in the secret projects were so small they can be inserted in a hypodermic needle during vaccination programs. And of course the people giving the vaccination have no idea that that's the case. This is a UPI mainstream media report. The Department of Health and Human Services said Thursday that it was about to begin testing a new technology designed to help more closely monitor and assist the nation's homeless population. Under the pilot program, which grew out of a series of policy academies held in the last 2 years, homeless people in participating cities will be implanted with mandatory radio frequency identification tags that social workers and police can use to track their movements. This is now, not sometime over the rainbow. Data from these tracking stations mounted on telephone poles will be transmitted to police and social service workers who will use custom Windows NT software to track movements of the homeless in real time. In what has become a chronic social problem, people living in shelters and on the streets do not seek adequate medical care. Oh, yeah. frequently contribute to the rising crime in major cities. You're homeless, you're a criminal, says so here. Supporters of subdermal tracking say the technology will discourage implanted homeless men and women from committing crimes while making it easier for the government to help them, all that stuff. That's now. And these are some headlines, recent headlines, I took from the internet about microchipping. In mainstream media, would a microchip keep your child safe? In those books I say what they're going to do is they're going to sell it on one level by saying it'll keep your child safe. It's now in the headlines, all these years later. Metropolitan police officers to be microchipped by top brass in Big Brother style tracking scheme. Wouldn't you feel really comfortable and nice and safe if you knew that your local policeman was microchipped by microchips that can affect them emotionally and physically and mentally? I mean, wouldn't that make you feel good? Microchip tagging for convicts. Oh, well, we got so many problems with the prisons, they're all full. What can we do? Oh, I know, we can microchip them. Mexican officials and police microchips is one after the other now. And, you know, I found that on the internet. I think that sums it up, really. That's where we are. Except it's not Bush, it's the shadow people controlling him. Coordinate two. The biggest terrorists are in government. Yeah. Of whatever persuasion, by the way, I ain't being party political here. Sod the lot of them. I'm very, I believe in equal opportunity and equal rights and stuff. Sod the lot of them equally. The terrorists, even those that we're told were terrorist events from external terrorists, when the evidence often points to the fact that it was not that at all, except that they were the front for it, they can kill horrendously a few thousand people at maximum, or they can, like 9/11 and that stuff, or they can kill fewer in other events. Horrific, horrible, etc. Yes, but these people, or the people that controlled them, pepper bombed Baghdad full of kids and civilians, and have so far killed and maimed hundreds of thousands of civilians to save them from a dictator. And you know, David Davis, it seems from what I read, is in favor of capital punishment. I cannot think myself of a more blatant big brother power than for some guy in a silly wig to have the power over life and death on behalf of the state. And I just wonder, because David Davis voted for the invasion of Iraq, I just wonder if those children and civilians, as they were pepper bombed in Baghdad, might just have thought that Big Brother might have arrived. But no, it's just about surveillance cameras and DNA databases. Oxford Concise Dictionary, definition of terrorist: one who favors or uses terror-inspiring methods of governing or coercing government or community, hence terrorism. I rest my case. Coordinate three: how the few can control the many by using the many to control themselves. Pyramid power. If you think of Russian dolls, one doll inside a bigger doll inside a bigger doll. Now think of pyramids. Small pyramid inside a bigger pyramid inside a bigger pyramid until there's one that encapsulates all of them. If you look at any organization today, a government, a university, a corporation, anything, a school, they're all structured as pyramids. The vast majority of people that work for those organizations work in the lower reaches of the pyramid, where most of the people in any organization are. But when you get to the top of the pyramid, you find a tiny few people, and they're the only people that know how all the different contributions of others within the pyramid fit together to form anything but an innocent picture. It's called in the CIA and organizations like that compartmentalization. So there's people all over the pyramids in government. People say, it's the government. Well, the government's a big thing. No, no. It's that which controls the government. There's people all over the pyramids who, they're not trying to manipulate anybody. 90-odd% of them. They're just trying to earn a living, look after their family, have a nice holiday and all that stuff. But they don't know how their contribution fits with them and them and them. Only the ones at the top know that. And these pyramids fuse together. The banking pyramid, the transnational corporation pyramid, the oil cartel pyramid, the pharmaceutical cartel pyramid. All these different pyramids, media ownership pyramid. I mean, you know, the major media corporations in America, for instance, are owned by the corporations like General Electric. And at the top is a pyramid that encompasses all of them. And at that point are these shadow families, people like the Rothschilds, the Rockefellers, the Habsburgs, and others, who are putting down these apparently, at the level we experience them, totally unconnected areas of our life, the same policies. And what those policies are, in its foundation form, anyway, in their foundation form, is centralization of power in every area of our lives. Because the more power is centralized, the more power the few have over the many. So you go into a bank, you hand over a check to the person behind the counter. They don't know what's happening in the bank manager's office and what's being decided. He don't know what's happening at the next level. They don't want to accept the next level. And that's how it's possible for a few to dictate the direction of the world, with the many working every day unknowingly to do it for them. And so, one name that is given to these families is the Illuminati, the Illuminated Ones. They know more than we do because they keep what they know from us. And behind the corporations, different masks on the same face, is actually a corporation. Different directors, different front men, not always, mind, interconnected directorships, but at control in the hands of the few. And it's the same with politics. Presidents, prime ministers, heads of the World Bank, Secretary General of NATO, they are perceived to be in the red bit at the top in terms of their own hierarchy. No, no. They're some way down. I'm probably being optimistic with this. They are there. That here today, come tomorrow, people that I mentioned earlier are there simply to fill the public positions through which those that operate in the shadows above them in the pyramid dictate the policy. And that's why the policy never changes, no matter what government's in power, an incessant centralization. So when I hear people saying, it's Bush, Bush is behind it, stop Bush, please. He's not Big Brother. Bloody Bush's big brother. We got nothing to bloody worry about there then. He's a vehicle and there'll be another one along soon. Because this is how it works. Controlling the movie by controlling all sides in the movie through the compartmentalized pyramid system. The secret society system, I could talk about this for ages, but we talk about secret societies that we can access in terms of their existence. The Freemasons, the Knights of Malta, Opus Dei, Knights Templar, and all these people. And they feed chosen people out of the top of their pyramids into the pyramid where the real action is. And often that pyramid, they don't give it a name. I call it the Illuminati, and other people call it the Illuminati, but often they don't give it a name. Why? You try investigating an organization that doesn't have a name. Very difficult. And this is how it works. This is Albert Pike. He was a Freemasonic god in America, and his statue is outside the Washington, D.C. police station to this day. This is what he said in one of his writings. Fictions are necessary to the people, and the truth becomes deadly to those who are not strong enough to contemplate it in all its brilliance. In fact, what can there be in common between the vile multitude and sublime wisdom? The truth must be kept secret, and the masses need a teaching proportioned to their imperfect reason. That's how the network behind the people who appear to be in power see the cattle population, you and me. You can also symbolize this network as a spider's web. You've got the spider at the center, and that's where the agenda is being dictated from. These different strands can symbolize different organizations and secret organizations, secret societies, which answer to the spider. The closer to the spider the organization is, the more secret it is, the more exclusive it is, and in the end, not even in the public knowledge it is. As you come out from the spider, you eventually start to have organizations that directly interact with the public. Organizations that people who follow politics will recognize. And then there's a few just back from there, which are kind of secret, but thanks to researchers, they've been acknowledged to exist, like one called the Bilderberg Group, which I'll get to. Now, within the spider, and this we're getting more and more relevant to this election now, this Big Brother by-election, The Round Table was a secret society that was started by a man called Cecil Rhodes, who died in 1902. And this secret society, which has been exposed massively in great detail by one of the people called Carol Quigley, who was a professor at Georgetown University, actually taught Bill Clinton. And he was connected to this Round Table network and had access to secret papers of that secret society to see what they'd been doing through the 20th century since they were created. The Round Table then started to create offshoot organizations which it controls. First came the Council on Foreign Relations, 1921 in America. The Rockefeller family were behind that. Then came the Royal Institution of International Affairs in London, actually came before that even. Then came the Bilderberg Group, 1954, and the United Nations, and the Club of Rome, 1968, and the Trilateral Commission in 1973. And the Trilateral Commission was created by the Rockefellers, David Rockefeller, and a man called Zbigniew Brzezinski, who is the man behind Barack Obama, who I mentioned earlier. The Bilderberg Group was officially met for the first time at the Bilderberg Hotel in Oosterbeek, Holland in 1954 in the May. And every year, although its steering committee meets very regularly, every year they have a meeting somewhere in the world of the high and mighty of global finance, business, politics, media ownership, intelligence agencies, and the military, including the Secretary General of NATO. The only place that massive meeting of people in positions of power that dictate the direction of the world will be reported, not what went on there necessarily, just the fact that they're meeting, is on the internet, on sites like mine, Alex Jones, the Wren site and stuff like that, and others, because the mainstream media who attend it, some of their members, never report its existence. If any other organization was doing that with those people, it would be reported, not the Bilderberg Group. Now, Carol Quigley wrote two books. One was called The Anglo-American Establishment, and another one, a big work, was called Tragedy and Hope, in which he exposed this from the inside, because he agreed with what they were doing. And as he pointed out in his books, their goal was the centralization of global power with a world government. He agreed with it. He just thought the public ought to know it was going on. This is what he wrote in one of his books, The Anglo-American Establishment. The picture is terrifying because such power, whatever the goals at which it may be directed, is too much to be entrusted safely in any group. No country that values safety should allow what the Milner Group, this is Alfred Milner, Lord Milner, who took over from Rhodes as its head, and sometimes it's called the Milner Group, the Milner Group accomplished, that is, that a small number of men would be able to wield such power in administration and politics, should be given almost complete control over the publication of documents relating to their actions, should be able to exercise such influence over the avenues of information that create public opinion, and should be able to monopolize so completely the writing and teaching of the history of their own period. And he goes on to explain how they were behind the major events of the 20th century, including the two world wars. So that is one of the key networks within this structure. And there's the Trilateral Commission, a co-creator, now behind Barack Obama. All that stuff will become relevant to this election as we go along. Well, I think one of the if I've made any contribution to this, then one of the things that I'm most proud of is to have come up with the phrase problem reaction solution to describe the most used and the most powerful method of mass mind and emotional manipulation that has been used on us to advance this agenda. It used to be called the Hegelian dialectic. And I thought problem, reaction, solution would sum it up more succinctly. What it means is that you want to change society in a way that if you did it openly and had a meeting and said, right, well, tell the public, this is what we're going to do, you know that you would get a massive public reaction against what you want. So you don't do it openly. You play this technique. Stage one, you create a problem. It could be a terrorist attack, it could be a war, it could be a government collapse, it could be a run on a currency, it could be a credit crunch, rising food prices, rising mortgages. Anything that will give you the opportunity to install the solution to that problem that will advance your agenda. Once you've covertly created the problem, you then tell the people through a pathetic mainstream media the version of that problem that you want the public to believe, i.e. Bin Laden orchestrated 9/11, Lee Harvey Oswald, kill Kennedy, whatever. If we had a journalistic profession, even just in any way justifying the name, problem, reaction, solution fall down, because the explanation would be investigated, it would be fined to be wanting, it would be reported to the people, this would collapse. Because we don't have a journalistic profession worthy of the name, the problem's created, the cover story of the problem is then reported to the people as official history, uninvestigated, and what they're looking for at stage two is a reaction from the public that says, in effect, something must be done, what are they going to do about it? Fear, outrage, do something! And then those who've covertly created the problem, got the public reaction, do something, then openly, through changes in legislation, offer the solutions to the problems they have themselves covertly created. And what are those solutions? They are changes in society to advance the Orwellian Big Brother state and the centrally controlled global agenda. At the 33rd level of Freemasonry, of the Scottish Rite, that's the highest official level, they have a motto, Ordo ab Chao, order out of chaos. Problem, reaction, solution. You try manipulating harmony, very difficult. You try manipulating chaos, piece of cake. They want chaos. You see, through problem, reaction, solution, we need to switch our minds a bit here. Because of problem, reaction, solution, they don't want crime figures to come down. Because if they do, they can't offer the solutions to the crime figures, which is more control. They want people knifed in the street. They want problems with food, because then they can offer the solution of genetically modified food, which they're doing, this government now, even though the people have rejected it overwhelmingly. They want the problems. They have to have them or they can't offer the solutions. This is what Bush said after 9/11. You're free and freedom is beautiful and you know it'll take time to restore chaos and order. Order out of chaos, but we will. Problem, reaction, solution. This is the Second World War. If you look at the First World War, after it was over, global power was in dramatically fewer hands than it was when that war started. Nothing changes a society globally or locally like a war. After the Second World War, it was in even fewer hands. And we had the creation of the United Nations. We had the Bretton Woods Agreement. We had the IMF. We had the World Bank came after it. And what they did, these bloodlines, these shadow people at the top of these pyramids, They were behind the British government and the American government of Roosevelt. They were behind Stalin, who was one of their front men. Remember the thing, both sides. And they funded the Nazi party into power, and they funded their war machine. In this book, written, 15 odd years ago, I exposed President Bush's grandfather, Prescott Bush, as a funder of Hitler and the Rockefellers. The Rockefellers paid for a whole floor of a German university for a guy called Ernst Rudin, who was Hitler's race purity expert. The Rockefellers. And the Rockefellers are behind all these organizations that I'm talking about. Now, Prescott Bush was a leading figure in an organization called the Union Banking Corporation, which was one of the Harriman operations in America. It interfaced with the European steel and banking empire of a guy called Fritz Thyssen, who was an acknowledged funder of Hitler, and funded through to Thyssen vast amounts of money. This is Prescott Bush, the president's grandfather, to fund Hitler. How did they go from the Weimar Republic, when they were taking their wages home in wheelbarrows, such was the inflation, to a war machine that could take on on Europe? Because of this. And after I came out with it, a few years passed, and then a guy who's the president of the Holocaust Museum in Florida, he came out publicly in America and said the Bush family fortune overwhelmingly comes from funding the Nazis, and even the Guardian newspaper. Hello, hey, yeah, all right, nice you caught up. In the last year or two, has run stories about Prescott Bush funding the Nazis. And what they were doing was creating the two sides to bring into conflict 55 million casualties, by the way, into a conflict in a war which has led to the change in the global state. That's how it's done. A Nazi said this. I wonder if we'll kind of recognize this from the last few years. Why, of course, the people don't want war. Why should some poor slob on a farm want to risk his life in a war when the best he can get out of it is to come back to his farm in one piece? Naturally, the common people don't want war, neither in Russia nor in England, nor for that matter in Germany. That is understood. But after all, it is the leaders of the country who determine the policy, and it is always a simple matter to drag the people along, whether it is a democracy or a fascist dictatorship. Voice or no voice, the people can always be brought to the bidding of the leaders. That is easy. All you have to do is tell them they are being attacked and denounce the peacemakers for their lack of patriotism and exposing the country to danger. It works the same in any country. Hermann Göring. Abraham Lincoln said, public sentiment is everything. Without public sentiment, nothing can fail. Without it, nothing can succeed. He who molds opinion is greater than he who enacts the laws. And he could say, he who molds opinion can then enact any laws he wants. Problem, reaction, solution. This is Hitler justifying the creation, that's a later one. This is him from Mein Kampf. All propaganda must be so popular on such an intellectual level that even the most stupid of those towards whom it is directed will understand it. People can be made to perceive paradise as hell and the other way round, to consider the most wretched sort of life a paradise. On the basic intellectual level, it's the terrorists, and we've got to protect you from the terrorists, so we've got to take your freedoms away so we can protect your freedom. Oh, that sounds good, I'll vote for him. Oh, this is another version now. No problem, reaction, solution. You don't need a real problem. You just need the public perception that there's a problem. Weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. No problem. Public perception there was justifies an invasion on a lie. I love this one. Invasion checklist. Missiles, tanks, troops, planes, bombs, ships, guns. A reason. Come on. Hey. I'd say let's have a brainstorm, but apparently that's politically incorrect. You have to have a thought shower now. Let's have a thought shower. True. Bloody true. And because the same people are creating the problem to offer the solution, the same people come up with the problem as well as with the solution. It's kind of strange. This is a picture from 1983 of Donald Rumsfeld meeting Saddam Hussein on behalf of the Reagan-Father Bush administration. And what was he doing? Hello, Sad, nice to meet you, mate. What he was doing was arranging the shipment of chemical and biological weapons from American corporations to Baghdad to be used against the Iranians in the Iraq-Iranian war. Don't take my word for it. In 2002, State Department documents in America came to light, and this is a mainstream newspaper report of what they said. Donald Rumsfeld, the U.S. Defense Secretary, and one of the most strident critics of Saddam Hussein, met the Iraqi president in 1983 to ease the way for US companies to sell biological and chemical weapons, including anthrax and bubonic plague cultures, according to newly classified US government documents. When he becomes defense secretary, he's using this. He used chemical weapons against the Kurds. Yes, which you gave him. Problem, reaction, solution. That's how it works. He was on the board of a European engineering giant called ABB in 2000. And at the time he was on the board, ABB sold nuclear technology to North Korea. When he became defense secretary, he condemned North Korea for having nuclear technology. And these stories, I can't go on about it all day, these stories I could list forever. Problem, reaction, solution. Like I say, we rejected GM food, now we've got a rising food prices and a food crisis, as they say, and now this government is saying GM food could be a solution. And cuss, like I say, when it's the agenda, they never take no for an answer, and they'll keep bringing it back and keep bringing it back, just like they are with the treaty, which is the constitution in Europe. Then, alongside problem, reaction, solution, comes the totalitarian tiptoe, as I call it. This works like this. You know you're going there from the start. But you know if you go there in big leaps, the change is going to be so vast that people are going to kind of look up from the television game show and go, hold on, honey, what's going on? Sorry, honey, I thought you were asleep. I was. Lift their head from the game show and they're going to say, what's going on? So they do it like that. They go from A to B and then to D and then maybe to E. They go as quickly as they can and as far as they can with each step, but not so far that they get a big public reaction. That's how this came about. I exposed the European Union way back in those books, and everything that's in them is happening now. This treaty, this constitution, this center, it's all in there. And I have to say, you know, when I hear David Davis going on about the European Union and all that stuff, well, like I said, you know, much earlier in this, whoever's in government introduces the agenda. No, perhaps I didn't, but I talk so much. I don't know when I have said it, when I haven't. But this is actually worth mentioning. What you notice is, this is how they dupe us in politics. Whichever party is in government introduces this agenda I'm talking about. Whichever party is out of government opposes the agenda. Then we have this farce called an election, and every now and again they change sides. Now, the government that was introducing the agenda is now in opposition. It can't do anything. It opposes the agenda. That which was in opposition opposing the agenda is now in government, so it introduces the agenda. And so the common theme is, whichever government of whatever persuasion is in power, the agenda goes on. That's why David Davis and the David Cameron and the Conservatives, when they take over from the current Labour government, ain't going to change a bloody thing. And David Davis, who now is against the European Union centralization of power because he's in opposition, was a government whip whose job was to cajole members of his party to vote in favor of the Maastricht Treaty when the Conservatives were in government, which was an enormous centralization of power in Europe. One thing in opposition, very different once you get into power and the agenda unfolds. So we started off in the European Union, free trade area, nothing to worry about, good for jobs. But as I expose in the books in great detail, or from the start, where we are now and where we're going, because there's still way to go in Europe, was decided, and it was how quickly we're going to get there. And we went stepping stone, totalitarian tiptoe, to where we are now. And it was always designed to be so. I talked about the Habsburg bloodline being one of these elite network. Otto von Habsburg was the man behind and the family behind the Pan-Europa movement, which was the instigator of the European movement that became what is now the European Union. He's still honorary head of the Europa movement. That's their symbol. And one of the key people involved in the manipulation of the European Union into places it is now was a Polish man called Joseph Rettinger. Joseph Rettinger was one of the major creators of the Bilderberg Group. All these things interact. The Bilderberg Group has been massively behind the centralization of power in Europe. Now, when you know the agenda, things that seem on the surface to be fine, okay, take on a different complexion. This is from a national newspaper. It's a map that came out of Europe, which is said to be the way they want to break Europe into regions, because they want the end of the nation state, because they want to break up the unity of a nation state to in unity resist the power of the center. They want to break them up. So when you hear, for instance, that they are, have devolved power to a Scottish Parliament and a Welsh Parliament, and if you remember, they tried to get English regions as well, but they couldn't quite get that through. That's the agenda. They'll come back to that. You watch. The reason is, on the face of it, in the movie, oh, it's to give power to the people. In the secret agenda, it's preparing the regionalization of this country for this. That's what it's about. Not freedom, but taking it away. And like I say, in America, there's another European Union emerging so fast, which is coming out of their free trade area called NAFTA, and they're going to call it the North American Union. So this is what they want, and nation states will be removed in a Europe of the regions. Now, globalization is exactly what I have been warning about in terms of this centralized Orwellian agenda all this last nearly 20 years. And I do cringe and shake my head when I see people, often of the left in politics, saying, what I'm saying about a global agenda for a centralized fascist state is a nonsense. And then I see them pick up their banners and go, stop globalization, stop globalization. What do they think globalization is? It is the incessant centralization of power in every area of our lives. It's the agenda I've been warning about all this time unfolding before us. And this is a massive part that I'm talking about here in the last like 20 minutes of Big Brother. It ain't just surveillance cameras and DNA databases. It's all of this combined. And the Labour government in Britain is orchestrating it all globally, I please. And this is what I came here to stand in this election to have a platform to talk about. He doesn't want to talk about it, David Davis. Let's sort out England first, he said to one of someone who asked him a question about it. Well, you ain't going to sort out England, the subsidiary or one of them, until you sort out the headquarters where it's coming from. So we have all these protests against the very organizations that this network has set up to centralize power, including the World Trade Organization. What is that? Again, in my books going way back, when it was called the GATT negotiations, it was in my books, and then became the World Trade Organization. It has the power to impose massive fines on any country that breaks the trading laws of the World Trade Organization to defend its own economy. Simple thing. If you want to control someone, you must make them dependent upon powers they have no control over. Once people have control over things that affect their lives, they are in control of their own lives. Once they are in the hands of forces they have no control over, they have lost control of their own lives. And that's why we're having the centralization of power, taking decision-making away from the severe of influence of people affected by those decisions. The idea is to tie up every nation and every area of the world with codependency on some other part of the world, so that no part of the world has the independence to decide their own destiny. It literally is like getting caught in a spider's web. How appropriate is that? That's what outsourcing, as they call it in America, is. Taking jobs and stuff into India and other places. And British companies buying up foreign companies buying up our basic needs like electricity and gas and water. That's what it's about. Taking control over our lives to a point where we have no influence. This is Big Brother. Not some guy sitting there watching a bloody camera screens. Just one level of it. This has been brought in. Microchipping, totalitarian tiptoe, a bit more. The ID cards are the stepping stone to that. And this, the taser. When this came out, the taser, 55,000 volts these unleashed from policemen on their targets. They said they're only going to be used, this is not long ago either, by the way, they're only going to be used by people trained in firearms. I said on my website, that day, these are going to be given to every police officer. They're now going to be given to every police officer. Why? Because I remember a headline from a guy who saw one of these working, a journalist, and the headline was, "Anything you say, officer, just don't use that thing on me." That's what they're about. You've got some brain donor in a uniform who hasn't got two brain cells to rub together. They're not all like that. There are many honorable exceptions, but some are. And you give them 55,000 volts they can legally unleash against you. Big Brother, bloody hell. I saw this. Fascism. You really think it's going to be this obvious? It's being brought in covertly, but it's reached the point where increasingly it is becoming that obvious. The secret agenda and the movie justifying the agenda is what this Big Brother debate in this by-election ought to be about. But it's not. Now, this may not seem, this next little section here, that it relates to this by-election, but it bloody well does. No need for prophecy. It's written down. In the year 2000, in America, an organization set up in the 90s by the people who controlled and control the Bush administration this last 8 years was set up. It was called the Project for the New American Century. And it was created by people who have since become known as neocons or neoconservatives. September 2000, they published this. And it was called Rebuilding America's Defenses, Strategies, Forces, and Resources for a New Century. This is what it said. I'll come to that. These are three main people who were in the creation of the Project for the New American Century. Dick Cheney, Vice President, more power than the President. Donald Rumsfeld, Defense Secretary at the time of 9/11 and the invasion of Iraq. Paul Wolfowitz, Defense Deputy Secretary at the same time. These are some of the other neocons. Michael Ledeen connects into the fascist network in Italy, an associate of a guy called Licio Gelli, who ran the P2 Freemasonry Lodge that was behind the Vatican Bank scandal that led to a guy called Roberto Calvi being hung under London Bridge over the Thames. Richard Pearl, one of the major architects acknowledged in the mainstream media of the invasion of Iraq and the war on terror. John Bolton, ditto. Douglas Feith, ditto. Jeb Bush, brother of the President. William Crystal, editor of the Murdoch Weekly Standard, a neocon paper in Washington, and one of the major advocates in the media of the invasion of Iraq and the war on terror. This is what it said, that document, September 2000. It called for American armed forces, it called American armed forces the cavalry on the new American frontier. He said that key allies like the United Kingdom are the most effective and efficient means of exercising American global leadership. That's not happened, has it? The United States has for decades sought to play a more permanent role in Gulf regional security, brackets control. While the unresolved conflict with Iraq provides the immediate justification, the need for a substantial American force presence in the Gulf transcends the issue of the regime of Saddam Hussein. It was an excuse to get in there. They ain't coming out. No intention, as I said from the start. It called for a blueprint for maintaining global US preeminence, in other words, the shadow network's preeminence through America, and shaping the international security order in line with America's principles and interests, see before. This American grand strategy must be advanced as far into the future as possible, and the US must fight and decisively win multiple simultaneous major theater wars as a core mission. September 2000. Look what's happened since. It says that peacekeeping missions demand American political leadership rather than that of the United Nations. Happened. It highlights North Korea, Syria, Iran, and Libya as dangerous regimes, target for takeover or control, and says their existence justifies the creation of a worldwide command and control system, World Army. This man, David Frum, who is a scholar of an organization called the American Enterprise Institute, which is a neocon operation that fits like that into the project for the new American century, was the man who wrote the famous State of the Union speech for Bush, I think it was in 2002, in which he said that there was an axis of evil that had to be targeted. What was that axis of evil? Iraq, Iran, North Korea. Straight off the pages of the Project for the New American Century document. It spotlights China for regime change. This is where it's leading. They want a conflict with China for a massive global problem which will bring in the global solution, the world government and the world army, to stop it ever happening again, even though they created it in the first place. I've been talking about this now since the mid-1990s, the China thing, and in 2000 they come out and actually say it. It is time for the presence of American forces in Southeast Asia, it says. This could lead to American and allied power providing the spur to the process of democratization in China. These people are crazy, but not stupid. It called for the creation of U.S. space forces to dominate space and total control of cyberspace to prevent their enemies using the internet, i.e. people like me and others who are exposing this. They're trying to more and more edit and censor the internet. Talks of developing biological, but these are the people we're talking about here, who are saving us from terrorists. Talks of developing biological weapons that can target specific genotypes. This may transform biological warfare from the realm of terror to a politically useful tool. And this is what it said in that document when it was saying that there was a problem with introducing this agenda because the people wouldn't have it. And this is what it said in terms of the timescale of this agenda. The process of transformation is likely to be a long one, absent some catastrophic and catalyzing event like a new Pearl Harbor. Let's have that again. This process of transformation is likely to be a long one, absent some catastrophic and catalyzing event like a new Pearl Harbor. 1 year after that document was published, 9 months after the people that wrote it came to power in the Bush administration, America had what Bush described at the time as our Pearl Harbor. And everything that has happened since 9/11, that has unfolded off the pages of that document quite demonstrably, has been justified by 9/11. Problem, reaction, solution. And no mainstream journalist has even thought of questioning the official version of 9/11. And we are being told by the left in politics, by often the Greens, though not all of them, I'm talking about the hierarchy, that Bush and Blair lied about everything. Beliar, you remember the posters? Those two lied about everything except the official story of 9/11. They told the whole truth about that in terms of how it was orchestrated. Naivety Anonymous, hello, is that you? I've got some customers for you. And they condemn people like me for having the nerve to raise the subject. Nutter, rubbish. Oh, God. I wrote a book a year. Well, actually, I wrote it immediately after 9/11 and researched it for a year. It came out a year to the month after 9/11. It takes the official story apart. It's a fairy tale. A fairy tale. But it's been justified. It's used to justify this, and that's why it happened. Bullshit. Absolutely. The official story of 9/11 has just left the room. Even academics that rubbished it to start with are saying the official story doesn't make sense. You've got pilot organizations that are saying, pilots against 9/11 and stuff, who were saying there's no way those people who couldn't fly Cessnas could do what they did with those planes. Endless people now. There are engineers organizations against 9/11 who are pointing out that those buildings could never have collapsed as they did because of fire and steel. But no one investigates it. You know, tonight, I think it's at 9 o'clock on BBC Two, we're going to have another farce from the BBC trying to explain why the third building on 9/11, Building 7, collapsed in a mirror of a controlled demolition. And they've taken 7 years and have not yet come up with an explanation for it. And as a result of 9/11, Cheney said, it's going to be a long, dirty war against the terrorists. What about a war on terrorism? What does that have that wars between countries don't have? It doesn't have an end that you can point to and say it's over. How do you know when a war on terrorism is over? You don't. That's the idea. That's why they've gone for this. And these are the people protecting us from terrorism. This is John Negroponte, the UN ambassador who was arguing in the UN for the invasion of Iraq. And this is what John Pilger wrote in the New Statesman magazine. How appropriate that John Negroponte is Bush's ambassador at the United Nations. This week he delivered America's threat to the world that it may require to attack more and more countries. As U.S. ambassador to Honduras in the early 1980s, Negroponte oversaw American funding of the regime's death squads, known as Battalion 316, that wiped out the democratic opposition while the CIA ran its Contra war of terror against the neighboring Nicaragua. Murdering teachers and slitting the throats of midwives were a speciality. What did Negroponte go on to be? The man who was the head of U.S. operations in Iraq after the invasion and then head of the whole of U.S. intelligence for a while. These are the people protecting us from terrorists. These are the people that operate here and provide the excuses here. We must get Bin Laden. Oh, really? Oh, yeah. Well, why haven't they got Bin Laden? They've got satellite technology that can read your number plate from space. Oh, I've got the number plate, mate. I can't see it. He ain't got a beard. He ain't got a beard. Can't find Bin Laden. This is from a Newsnight documentary. For people watching this on the internet, it's a current affairs program in Britain. A guy called Greg Palast is an American journalist, and as journalists go, he's well ahead of your normal mainstream journalist. He said, in Saudi Arabia, this is a quote that was from Michael Springman, U.S. consulate in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, that was on the program. He was in that position when Father Bush was president. In Saudi Arabia, I was repeatedly ordered by high-level State Department officials to issue visas to unqualified applicants. These were essentially people who had no ties either to Saudi Arabia or to their own country. I complained bitterly at the time there. I returned to the US, I complained to the State Department here, to the General Accounting Office, to the Bureau of Diplomatic Security, and to the Inspector General's office. I was met with silence. What I was protesting was, in reality, an effort to bring recruits rounded up by Osama bin Laden to the US for terrorist training by the CIA. They would then be returned to Afghanistan to fight against the then Soviets, which I mentioned earlier. And this is Palast on the same report on the program. I received a phone call from a high-placed member of a U.S. intelligence agency. He tells me that while there's always been constraints on investigating Saudis, under George Bush it's gotten much worse. After the elections, the agencies were told to back off investigating the bin Ladens and Saudi royals, and that angered agents. Why? because the Bush family were connected into the Bin Laden family in ways I describe in my books, and it was one of those to create the war on terror. This is the late Robin Cook, just before he died. He was one time Foreign Secretary in Britain. Throughout the 1980s, Bin Laden was armed by the CIA and funded by the Saudis to wage jihad against the Russian occupation of Afghanistan. Al-Qaeda, literally the database, was originally the computer file of the thousands of Mujahideen who were recruited and trained with the help of the CIA to defeat the Russians, as I said earlier. In other words, they were creating the terrorists to frighten the people with, to justify the introduction of the Big Brother state. David Davis, Shami Chakrabarti of Liberty, wake the hell up! Because they don't want to know about this. Massive connections between the Bin Laden family and the Bush family. And here's the man, Zbigniew Brzezinski, who was at the heart of what I've just described when he was in the Carter administration, the man behind Barack Obama. Change we can believe in. This is how the whole thing works. One force controlling both sides to create a movie to manipulate public opinion to accept changes in society that lead to the Orwellian state. Fear. Fear, the four-letter word that controls the world. Once you get people in fear, they will look outside of themselves for people or organizations to protect them from what they have been manipulated to fear. Fear is the greatest of all mass mind manipulation techniques. Because of fear, we have this introduced, justified by what I've been talking about. This is a poster from Germany in 1934. That's a poster from London today. And this is from Sheffield. Somebody in Sheffield sent me this. This is from Sheffield bus station. Every bus, tram, let's start from the top. Spit and run, you'll still get caught. DNA. Ooh, aye. Every bus, tram and interchange has DNA testing kits. Spit at the staff and you can be traced and prosecuted, even if we don't know what you look like. And your records will be on the National DNA database, DNA database forever. We're free, honey. I love it. Did he spit? Get the DNA tested. What? You're talking about? Here we go. Help me find and kill the terrorists. Tell on your neighbours. Tell on your friends. Tell on your family. Hey, there's some meeting going on at that Willoughby Manor Hotel. I think, don't know what's going on here. I think we better get over here quick. Yeah, you might bloody learn something. Get over. I promise never to question authority. I promise never to bring up my rights. Stop asking questions. They'll all want to do it. Quiet! Shut up! But you can have free speech. There you go. No problem. Free speech zones. What's that about? Free speech zones. You cannot say what you want here, but you can say it there. I've got a uniform on, so I've got a brain. The internet is fantastic for spreading information, but they're trying to edit that and censor that, as I say, because that's a bad side of the internet for them. But the internet's magnificent if you want to track people and track what they're doing and stuff. This is being justified in the same way. And this is Hitler. I was going to say this earlier, but it's come later. Adolf Hitler proposing the reasons the Gestapo had to be created. An evil exists that threatens every man and woman and child of this great nation. We must take steps to ensure our domestic security and protect our homeland. I think I've heard that somewhere before. Michael Chertoff, head of Homeland Security in America. And now we have a Homeland Security. Homeland Security has suddenly become a name of departments and shadow departments. It's Homeland Security. So like I say, that's what it is. Okay. The Big Brother by-election. I do go on, and I probably will a bit longer now. Quite a bit longer yet, actually. There is. Now, you see, when you're going to control debate, and I want to say this because, you know, I want to keep this within the bounds, not exaggerate and make bloody wild bloody claims that haven't been investigated. I'm not saying in this little bit that I'm going to talk about now with relation to this by-election that David Davis and Shami Chakrabarty, the head of Liberty, a bit like the Civil Liberties Union in America, I'm not saying they are in full awareness of what I'm going to talk about now. They might be. I have no evidence that they are. I've only been investigating this since I started to realize this election was not what it appeared to be. And I'm not saying that they know. But, you see, the thing is that there's different ways of putting people into places that suit you. If you've got someone of a certain mentality and you put them in a certain place, then you don't have to manipulate them because that mentality is going to play that out the way you want it anyway. They haven't got a clue that actually they're being manipulated, but I don't know. It may be one way, it may be another. But what you get from these two, who have become the twin pillars of anti-Big Brother within the establishment, if you pick up any newspaper or turn on any television news bulletin now, that involves a Big Brother type story, they will quote this lady, or because of this election, they will quote David Davis, who's now become the Mr. Anti-Big Brother. However, it's anti-Big Brother in an incredibly limited way, which limits the scale of the debate, if you can hijack the debate, so that these things I'm talking about today do not enter the debate. And I'll tell you this, although it's not appeared in the mainstream media, it has to be 10 foot high with glowing bloody neon lights before, you know, the Quentin Letzers of this world go, "Oh, what's that?" But outside the public arena and getting very close to it, there is I really can't exaggerate this too much, a massive awakening going on all over the world of people among the general population who are starting to see this stuff and become aware of it. And if you are behind it, what you want to do is to hijack that debate about this Orwellian transformation from those with the bigger picture. You want to pull it into those that are talking only about the little picture. Because in doing so, you limit the debate and you hold the walls on this stuff that we really need to know about. And the more I look at this election, the more I see that all over the place. One of the people that's been up to this constituency to support David Davis in his campaign against Big Brother is a Tory MP called Ed Vasey. Ed Vasey is a original, at the foundation, signatory on the statement of principles of an organization called the Henry Jackson Society. Henry Scoop Jackson, as he was called, was an American Democratic senator who had a view of the world that mirrored that of the neocons in the Bush administration that I've been talking about. People think that because they control the Republican administration now in America, they must have been spawned by the Republican Party. No, no. Many of them, including Pearl and these people, were aides to the Democrat Henry Jackson before they jumped ship to the Reagan-Bush administration in the 80s and then got the power to take over this Bush administration. So Henry Jackson represents everything the neocons stand for, which is, as the Henry Jackson Society talks about, if necessary, taking military action to impose democracy on countries that they say are undemocratic, and for what that means, see the invasion of Iraq. Ed Vasey, like I say, was an original signatory. And he is a neocon, as they call it, a neoconservative. Now, what is a neoconservative connected to the Henry Jackson Society, which, as we'll see in a second, fundamentally connects into the Project for the New American Century in America and the American Enterprise Institute, which is the sister organization? What is he doing suddenly opposing Big Brother when his network has created the problem which is justifying Big Brother. These are the international patrons of the Henry Jackson Society. Richard Pearl, Douglas Feith, Crystal, William Crystal, Robert Kagan. Crystal and Kagan were the co-founders of the Project for the New American Century that produced that document which has played out ever since in death and slaughter and conquest, which has justified the introduction of the Big Brother state. They are involved fundamentally with the Henry Jackson Society, and Ed Vasey comes up to support David Davis against Big Brother. I think there's more to know here. Also in the Henry Jackson Society, James Woolsey, Project for the New American Century, director of the CIA. Sir Richard Dearlove, head of MI6 across the period of the invasion of Afghanistan and Iraq. And this guy, Erwin Stelzer, head of the Rothschild Bank at one time, scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, and now with another neocon offshoot called the Hudson Institute. And David Davis has been paid by both the Hudson Institute and the American Enterprise Institute to speak at their events. Coming up to this constituency before the polling on Thursday is this man, Michael, I am a neoconservative, from his own lips, Gove. Another shadow minister in the Cameron administration, conservative administration. He was also an original signatory to the statement of what the Henry Jackson Society stands for. Statement of principles, as they call it. And he's coming up, like Vasey, from the same organization, to challenge Big Brother for David Davis. This man's talking on behalf of David Davis. Colonel Tim I Support Davis Collins, who became famous for his military operations in Iraq. Guess what Colonel Tim I Support David Davis Collins put his name to? He was an original signatory to the Statement of Principles of the Henry Jackson Society, which connects into the Project for the New American Century and the American Enterprise Institute in America that orchestrated the invasion of Iraq and the war on terror, which is being used to justify the Big Brother state. Patrick Mercer, Tory MP, been in this constituency supporting David Davis against Big Brother. He is a consultant for Blue Hackle, which is one of these private army security organizations which connects with others to create a connections of private armies that are being paid by government to operate in places like Iraq. He's went on a fact-finding mission to Iraq, paid for by an organization called HART, that produces and uses the very Big Brother technology that David Davis is saying we've got to stop. He was paid, this is this guy, he was paid with his expenses and his flights and his hotels and everything to go on a fact-finding trip to Pakistan and Afghanistan by this security organization called the Saladin Group. And this is from Saladin's website. This is what they do, just part of it. Saladin can provide surveillance services to organizations and individuals in order to gain evidence during an investigation. Saladin staff may have many years of experience in covertly following surveillance subjects to obtain information on their movements, activities, and contacts. This includes both mobile surveillance in vehicles and static surveillance in a fixed position. Patrick Mercer, connected to these organizations, was in this constituency a few days ago to support a challenge to Big Brother. And the Freedom site set up by David Davis wasn't set up by David Davis at all. It was just his address suddenly appeared on it. It was originally set up by this organization, Fleischmann Hillard, who are operating worldwide. And among their specialities increasingly is manipulating countries to accept identity cards. This guy from this organization, Paul Borg, he was the man who actually set up the David Davis for Freedom website. And this is a little start of an article in The Independent on Sunday. A spin doctor, Kevin Bell, he's a major executive of this Fleischmann Hillard, a spin doctor behind David Davis and his much-vaunted freedom campaign against the creeping state surveillance, is an influential figure in the worldwide promotion of identity cards, The Independent on Sunday can reveal. I tell you what, I'm bloody glad I decided to come here. I really am. And so what we have is now a twin point of everything to do with Big Brother in terms of opposition between David Davis and Sharmi Chakrabarty. Sharmi Chakrabarty was a Home Office barrister from 1996 until September the 10th, 2001, the day before 9/11, when she became head of Liberty. She's an alumna of the British America Project, described as a junior Bilderberg, which was created to promote British American relations and is sponsored by Monsanto and a stream of American corporations. She is a governor of the Ditchley Foundation, which you'll find in this book from 15 years ago. And it is connected into the Bilderbergs and that network we saw earlier. And that was created to promote British-America relations. Now, I'm not saying she's knowingly manipulated. I don't know that. I'm not saying it's not true. I'm not saying it is true. I don't know that. But what we've got here is the manipulation of a situation in which establishment figures, because whatever she might say, she's an establishment figure, and so is David Davis. Establishment figures are hijacking, for whatever reason, the Big Brother opposition that is being introduced by other parts of the establishment. And as a result, narrowing the debate so people like me and the information that I'm talking about today don't get access to it. Let's just worry about England first. Then somebody who's here today, who was canvassing a little bit yesterday for me, came across David Davis synchronistically, asked him about the Bilderberg group, and according to what she tells me, he said he didn't know anything about it. And could someone send information? Well, he obviously doesn't talk to George Osborne, the shadow chancellor, and as things stand at the moment, the next chancellor of the exchequer of this country in control of our finance, or much as we do control our finance now. He was at the Bilderberg group meeting a few weeks ago in Washington, and that's the third he's attended. And he was asked by someone who's been supporting me in this constituency, David Cameron, when he was here a few days ago, about the Bilderberg group, and he said, there's nothing to worry about, basically. And if it was important, I'd want to be there, he said. Well, stick around, mate. Your chance will come, don't you worry. So this Big Brother by-election is not what it seems. And when we're talking about limiting the debate, my goodness me, it's been limited in the time I've been here. They don't want to talk about any of this stuff. And when you talk to it to the media, of course, you're a nutter and you're all pushed aside. This is what it's about, controlling the debate. So what do you do then? You control the outcome. Yeah. I tried to get into a David Davis Bob Geldof public presentation in the whole Guildhall the other day. I wasn't going to cause trouble. I went along, I'd got a ticket, a constituent in this constituency had got me a ticket. It was a public one, as long as you had a ticket. And I turn up. I just wanted to listen to what they had to say. I'm a researcher, I want to know. If I got a chance to ask a question, great. If I didn't, well, equally great. At least I'd see what they got to say. And then suddenly, you know, the pound of lard with a shirt on came over, hyperactive. Boom. Suddenly, a miracle happened and it became a private event. It's kind of funny because this is the guy who stopped me. His name's Andrew Percy. He's a prospective candidate for Goole, I think, that constituency. And this is what he said after the Geldof meeting in which he'd stopped me attending. So Bob came to speak at a gathering from across Yorkshire about the people across Yorkshire about the erosion of liberty and freedom in the UK in recent years. His speech was brilliant, and I particularly like the extract below, which talks about the loss of our freedoms and privacy in recent years. Compartmentalization of the mind. And while this is going on, and this level of the quote debate is going on, global Big Brother is expanding its power by the hour now, as control goes further and further away. And it's going into the fine detail of our lives. We're now having people looking through rubbish to see if there's any evidence of activity, of terrorist activity. You can't even relax when you're putting your rubbish out in the bin. And then there's this thing. Traffic wardens. Ah, this is an interesting one. A few months ago now, I had a letter from a traffic warden somewhere in Britain. He's still a traffic warden, so I won't say who it was. And he told me a strange story and said I might find it of interest. He said he was called, he'd been a traffic warden for a long time, nice chap. And he said he was called in by the boss, who gave him, out of nowhere, three cards. One was a card that gave him authority to be a traffic warden, fair enough. But the second card was what they call a pace card. And on it are the words that you have to say, that a policeman says, to arrest somebody. You do not have to say anything, but anything you do not say. That one. It's called a pace card. And the other, the third card, was his authority to enter private property. Of course he's going, hold on a second. What's going on? I'm a traffic warden. I give tickets for parking. I don't want these. And the boss said, go away and put them away until further notice. A few days later, he's with a group of traffic wardens near the police station, and an old friend of his, he hadn't seen him for a while, he was a policeman, walks out of the police station with a briefcase, walks over and makes conversation with the traffic wardens, you know, there, and then towards the end, he said to this guy, who's the old friends, he called him over. And he said, I want to tell you something. About four or five times in this conversation, the policeman said, don't tell anybody else. Don't repeat this, whatever you do. This policeman said that he had been designated to do a job in that county, and there was someone like him in every other county. He said his job, and his fellow officers around the country, was to prepare for a coming war. That this war was expected to trigger enormous civil unrest in Britain, and that the military and the mainstream police force would be overwhelmingly focused on dealing with the civil unrest. Therefore, people like traffic wardens, private security firms, and CCTV operators, etc., were going to be brought forward to do the jobs that the mainstream police force were currently doing, but would be tied up with over this civil unrest. He said, that's why you have been given these cards. A few days after this letter arrived, and I talked to him, and he sent me the cards, and I saw them and sent them back so he wouldn't get found out. I picked up the newspaper to see that traffic wardens were being redesignated civil enforcement officers and being given greater powers. This is the world we're looking at, and these things that come out of nowhere, oh, where did that come from, are manipulated and manipulated behind the scenes until they come to the surface in apparently out of nowhere, not out of nowhere at all. So, the elephant in the living room is there when you connect the dots. It ain't there when you don't. So they don't want the dots connecting. And this is what it's about. You know why it's gone into the fine detail of our lives, and you can't put, you know, things in your car saying it's for sale? It's the same principle, because this is a mind game in the end. It's a mind game. If you can control people's mind and perception, you control their actions. It's a mind game. Everything's up here. The idea is to do the same on the population as a whole that they do on laboratory mats and rice and mice in these laboratory mazes, where they put a mouse in a maze, and if it goes down certain channels within the maze, it gets an electric shock. After it's been shocked a few times, you can take the electronic equipment away, and that mouse will still not go down that channel. What you've done is programmed the mouse into acquiescence to do what you want them to do, to become subservient to what you want the mouse to do. Now, what is happening now is in all these areas of our lives, right down to the finest detail now, as I say, we are being shocked in various ways, no matter what we do. Traffic cameras, surveillance cameras, cards in windows, rubbish bin out on the wrong day, fine. Huh? What it's doing is creating a situation in the collective mind where, I guess you could describe it as anything for a quiet life. Subservience. And the tasers with the police are fundamentally connected to the same thing. I know you're talking rubbish, officer. I know you're wrong. I know it's outrageous, but if I do anything to resist that, you're going to use that thing on me. I'll go quietly. We're laboratory rats or mice in a maze. And what we need to do is take the shocks and still go anyway. I've been... I've spent 20 years being ridiculed, being abused, being misrepresented, being made fun of, being laughed at in the street, having my kids laughed at school. I'm still freaking here. Political correctness. In Orwell's 1984 book, he had a thing called Newspeak. You know, and he said, you know, when you at this level of reality, there are many other levels of reality, we won't go there today, though I do, but at this level of reality, we think in words. You have a thought, you think it in words. When you reduce the language available through political correctness, and now this you are speak in text language and stuff, you are, as time passes, what we call time anyway, you are suppressing the amount of words to describe your own thoughts, never mind your own views. This is what political correctness is about, and also playing minorities off against each other. And the left in politics has been played like a violin. I'm from the left, there's me art right there. And here's me sodding brain here. There are a lot of genuine people on the left, what they call on the left. It's all a load of crap anyway, right, left. It's all part of the same scam. Doesn't matter. You know, you go far enough right, you meet yourself on the left coming back. The same bloody thing. There's some genuine people who want to do genuine things, but they've been scammed. And one of the scams is supporting political correctness. You can't upset somebody. Well, maybe they deserve to be upset. I'm upset that I can't have my view. Okay, that's not political correct. You know, I've got a hand that's completely knackered through arthritis, right? The only thing I can do with my hands is type with those fingers, very little else, right? It's crippled. My hand is crippled. You want to tell me my hand is crippled? I don't have a problem with that. You know why? It's bloody crippled. But no, I'm digitally challenged. You know what I said earlier? Some people would have got it, maybe some people didn't. When I talked earlier about you can't say brainstorm, you have to say thought shower, that is actually being introduced by some companies. I'm not kidding, it's not a joke, it's happening. And What it's doing is playing minority off against minority. So, for instance, and basically, you remember that image where all the countries were tied up in that web of stuff? They want to do that with minorities. So everyone polices everyone else. This is the idea. The few can't police the many. They have to get the many to police each other. That's what they do. And for instance, if you're a gay person, good luck to you. I mean, I have a simple philosophy on life. Do what you like so long as you don't impose it on anyone else. That's it. That's my philosophy. Anyway, what a gay person can say, that's not political correct. I'm taking you to a human rights tribunal for saying this about me. But then he can't say something about a black person, or he can't say something about a Jewish person, or he can't say something about an Islamic person, and the black person can't say something about an Islamic person. And so it goes on, where everyone is policing everyone else. In Canada, they've got a massive human rights scam going on, and one of them is gay, a gay organization took these people on, the Human Rights Commission, over political correctness, and now a woman is taking the gay people to the same Human Rights Commission, or a Human Rights Commission, because they won't let women into their gay club. You know, I mean, this is how it works, right? This is what I'm talking about. It's nothing to do with freedom, it's to do with control. And by the way, you know that guy, Sir Trevor Phillips, is it? No, not Sir Trevor Phillips, it's Trevor Phillips, CBE or MBE or something, right? He's head of the Human Rights and Racial Discrimination Organization that the government runs, right? Well, I wrote to him because I came across this thing, and it said, if you have any evidence of racial discrimination, right, write to the Racial Equality Commission. It's called something else now. Bigger chair, more money, same thing. And if you want to report evidence or cases of racial discrimination, and we'll investigate, right? So I write to him and I say two things. First of all, I'm reporting the British royal family as the most racist institution on the planet, because not only do you have to be white, in effect, you have to come from one bloodline and you have to follow, at least officially, one religion. I want this investigated. And I said to Trevor Phillips, oh, by the way, why are you, as head of against racial equality, why did you accept an honor from the Queen? It was an MBE or CBE or something. From the most racist institution in the world. And I got this bullshit letter back from a lawyer, completely avoiding the whole question, because, of course, they had nowhere to go. And the bottom line was, we don't choose to investigate this. Thank you very much. I love this one. That's a politically correct sign. It's perfect. There you go. And at the bottom, if you can't read it at the back, at the bottom in small letters, it says, also, the bridge is out ahead. So that's where we're going. Now, I've got to get this one. Now, you know, the theme of money. What's that got to do with Big Brother? What's that got to do with Big Brother? It's nothing to do with Big Brother. You know, there's no surveillance cameras on the pound. But, what's going on? David Davidson talked about it. This is one of the greatest aspects of Big Brother. Let's just analyze. What is Big Brother? It's control by the very few of the rest. Now, what's the greatest form of control on this planet? Money. And you ask the question. People don't ask these questions. I've asked economists this question. They can't answer me. Is money and who creates it? First of all, there is no money in terms of anything physical worth anything. Money is only what we are programmed to believe it's worth. Money is figures on a screen. That's it. When you go into a bank and you ask for a loan, mortgage or something, say £50,000, much more these days, £50,000, what does the bank then do? It types into your account £50,000. That's it. It doesn't print any money, doesn't mint any coins, it doesn't move any precious metal a single sodding inch. It just types into your account £50,000. From that moment, you are paying interest on £50,000 that has never, does not, and will never exist. And to get that non-existent £50,000, you have to sign over wealth that does exist. Your house, your car, your business, your land. And if you don't pay back through circumstances none of your creation, not just the principal, but the interest on the loan, then they get your land and wealth that does exist and your house because you've not paid back money that doesn't exist. That is how the money system works, because of this. The same force that I've been talking about has controlled the banking system, the pyramid within pyramid, and they've controlled the political system, and therefore laws have been passed. The fractional reserve lending is one name for them, that allows banks to lend at least, and it is at least when you follow the trail, 10 times what it has on deposit. So every time you put a pound in a bank, it can lend 10 it doesn't have to someone else. And once it's given you the £50,000, you then might go and put that £50,000 in another bank. The other bank now has the right to lend 10 times the £50,000 you've just got from this bank. And this is how it all works. Now, what's the difference between an economic boom, prosperity, and all the rest of it, and a credit crunch depression, economic depression? One thing and one thing alone, effectively. The amount of money in circulation at any time. Who controls that? The private banking cartel on their decisions on how many loans to make called credit, which theoretically puts buying exchange rate, means of exchange into circulation. The more they loan money, the more money is circulating, the more money there is to buy things, the more things need making, everything starts to expand. People tend to get in more debt when they are in a boom because they're confident, they've got lots of orders at the company, the job's strong, so we'll have two holidays, we'll have a bigger house, we'll have another car or a bigger car. That, in the banking system, and this scam has been played for centuries, and what economic correspondents are earning a ridiculous amount of money, whatever they pay them, it's too much. They call this the economic cycle, as if it's some natural phenomenon. What happens is, fishing rod out. The banking cartel keeps interest rates low, enticing more people in, makes loads of loans, reduces the criteria by which they will give a loan, lots of money in circulation, people in more debt. And here's the point. You know when they you go for a loan of £50,000, the bank creates, at least in theory on your computer screen, £50,000. That's it. But you're not paying back £50,000, you're paying back £50,000 plus interest. The interest on the £50,000 has not been created, it never is. Therefore, by design, there is never ever enough money in circulation to pay back all the principal and interest on the loans outstanding. Bankruptcy, losing your home, is built in on purpose. So, out goes the fishing line, and then it starts being reeled in. They create an excuse for a credit crunch or a problem, and so what do the banks do? Coordinated through this system of pyramids within pyramids, they start taking money out of circulation. They raise the criteria for giving loans out, which they are now. They raise interest rates or whatever they need to do to take money out of circulation. Now, as they take money out of circulation, there's even less circulating to pay back all the debt that was created when they put loads of money out there. So people start in massive amounts losing their homes, their jobs, their businesses, their land, their possessions. And so we move over to the depression, the downturn, the recession, and they then start trawling from the people the wealth that does exist, because there's not enough money in circulation, nothing to do with them, they can't pay the non-existent money back. And this economic cycle has been played for centuries, and it has sucked out of the people the real wealth into the hands of the few. And that is such a fundamental part of Big Brother, because it's a fundamental part of human control. Are you listening, David Bloody Davis? I'm sorry if I'm going on, but you've come so far. I want to give you everything I can today, because all these things connect and we need to know about them. If you want a world government which controls everyone on the planet, what do you need more than anything else? You need laws that everyone on the planet has to obey. You need international law. My goodness me, all the time. International law. Good evening. International law. Here's the news. International law. International law. That is the creation of the laws that the world government is intended to introduce. Because international law will be how that controls the lives of everyone. And if you go against international law, that's why the World Army is there to intervene. International law. International law. Global warming. The carbon con. This is a cracker. This is a cracker. You won't hear David Davis and Shami Chakramarti talk about this. In fact, you'll hear them talk about the opposite. I talked earlier about this network, and one of that network is called the Club of Rome, set up in 1968. People like Henry Kissinger, by the way, Henry Kissinger, massively part of this over the decades, is involved in all of them. And he's involved in the Club of Rome, and connects into the Rockefellers and all the people I've been talking about. And its job has been to manipulate the environmental movement. In 1991, its founder, the founder of the Club of Rome, Pecci, was quoted as saying in a Club of Rome document, as saying that when in they were looking at how to, in effect, do this manipulation, he said, in searching for a new enemy to unite us, we came up with the idea that pollution, the threat of global warming, water shortages, famine, and the like would fit the bill. Here's another member of the Club of Rome. And that's why the official story of the reason for climate change, carbon emissions caused by humans, is as much a nonsense as the official story of 9/11. It is a problem, and the solution is international law, more and more taxation to save the planet, more and more imposition of the Big Brother state to save the planet. Now, I'm not saying that pollution's a good thing. Not saying that. But if we're going to get streetwise, we need to understand that it's not causing climate change. Well, I mean, having researched this for nearly 20 years, there's a little thing you start to learn about this guy, Al Gore. If he's involved, it's a scam. End of story, by the way. End of story, by the way. It's a scam. And of course, for his Inconvenient Truth documentary, let's just redesignate what documentary means on that criteria. He was given the Nobel Peace Prize and the Oscar. Why? Because this network controls that. They don't control every Oscar and all the rest of it, but if they need someone to get one, they can make sure they get one. Same with the Nobel Peace Prize. Kissinger won the Nobel Peace Prize. Bloody war criminal. Yeah, Blair. So, what we've got as a result of all this manipulation, Al Gore, is, you know if it's a scam as well, because Madonna's on the stage singing about it, right? This is the Global Warming Survival Handbook, going with the Live Earth concerts, orchestrated by Al Gore. David de Rothschild wrote that. Very good. I'm sure they care about the planet, as they're lending us money that doesn't exist and trawling the wealth as a result of us not paying it. Now, there's a thing they say about computers. Crap in, crap out, right? If you put garbage into a computer, you get garbage out. That's how the computer models came up with global warming. International law is where it's leading. and this is the cause of global warming. Stands back in amazement. You mean the sun has an effect on Earth temperature? Are you kidding? What happens is the sun goes in cycles. It generates what are called sunspots, which are massive explosions of energy powered out into the solar system, which comes to the Earth eventually as solar radiation. Some of these explosions called sunspots are as big as the Earth and even as big as Jupiter. When it is exploding energy, the temperature goes up. This is what these sunspots are. You can see them here. I think they might have a bearing on temperature. I think so. This is the recent sunspot cycle coming round, or all the rest of it. And of course, there are cycles where you have a sunspot cycle going round at this level of temperature, and then you have a cycle going round at this level of temperature. So that as the cycles go round, it's hotter or cooler in the different cycles as we pass through what we call time. Now, other planets in the solar system have been warming up. I don't know whether you've seen them factories on Mars. Them bloody Martians and them four with by fours, you know, it's bloody outrageous. Now, what is the common denominator of these other planets in the Earth? Can't work it out. Must be the sun. Now, this is the great one. The temperature's higher than it's ever been since records began. When did they begin? 1862? That's 5 minutes ago in weather cycles. What are you talking about? Back about 800 years ago, they had the medieval warm period. This is mainstream science. This is not me coming up with alternative stuff. The medieval warm period, the temperature was higher than it is now. Okay? What caused the temperature to be higher in the medieval warm period than it is now? Could it have been turbocharged handcarts? What do you reckon? Could be. Flatulent horses, maybe. I can just see a medieval weather forecaster arriving in the village. Dobbin's got the wind, I think we're in for hot summer. And I'm mad. After the medieval warm period, and of course, if they took back the temperatures to then global warming looks very different now. But what they do is they take it back to a period called the Little Ice Age. When the temperature dropped to the point where the Thames froze over, and they used to have ice fairs on the Thames. You can still see depictions of it in Christmas cards and stuff. It just so happens that during the medieval warm period, there was a period of increased solar radiation, and during the Little Ice Age, there was a decrease in solar radiation. So if you follow the red, which is the Earth temperature, and the green is sunspot activity. I think there might be some connection there myself. Let's come forward. Again, the green is sunspot activity, the red is Earth temperature. Up to 1940, it was rising as we came out of the Little Ice Age. After the war, this period included, when there was a massive increase in industrialization, and therefore carbon emissions, temperatures fell from 1940 to 1975 to such an extent that the BBC were running documentaries about the dangers of the coming ice age.
Yeah, I remember that.
From 75, it started to climb as sunspot activity climbed. This is a scientist, I saw his presentation a few weeks ago, called Peter Taylor. Now this man is no, oh, the oil companies are paying him, scientist. He's a former advisor on pollution and energy policy to national governments, the EU and the UN, and he was a lead advocate for Greenpeace. He was the man who broke the story through a Yorkshire Television documentary years ago, when Yorkshire Television did some really good documentaries, about the cancer clusters around what was called Windscale, now Sellafield, and the connection between the two. This is what Peter Taylor, a Greenpeace advocate at one time, says about global warming. Behind the scenes, there is major disagreement among scientists. I know that. People at the cutting edge of their discipline are saying it's a nonsense. It doesn't stand up. They don't get the platform that the song sheet scientists get. Parallel to carbon dioxide rising, the solar field has increased by over 200% since 1900, and this is not factored into computer models. Global temperature is not rising as predicted. In fact, it fell by a whopping 0.6 degrees over the last 12 months, as much as it had gained in the previous 50 years. Many of the apparently random fluctuations of past temperature, like when Vikings grew crops in Greenland, correlate to variations of the solar electric field. Between 1983 and 2001, cloud cover, according to International Satellite Cloud Climatology Project, fell by 4% more than enough to heat oceans and account for global warming. A spate of recent science shows that temperature oscillations are timed by solar cycles, that the jet stream is affected by the solar wind, and that past high and low points in the solar cycle correlate with past temperature swings. And as a result of that, because we're being lied to systematically, and the Quentin Letts is saying, it must be true because they're saying it, we are being scammed for vast changes in our society of a big brother nature on another massive global lie. Temperature's been falling recently, so much so that this was a headline in the Daily Mail. Recently, global warming could stop naturally for 10 years, say scientists. And you know what they said? Oh, we've still got to justify global warming. It said in the same piece, they said, oh, but imagine how hot it's going to be when it starts again. All right, okay. International law, that's what it's about. I'm coming to an end now, but let's look at why this is possible, because this is where we come in. It's what I call the prison with the bar-bars. It's a prison because we act like bloody sheep. We take in what people tell us and we believe it without question. And therefore, we are programmed to react as we choose to react, as they want us to react. We're not choosing to react, we're reacting. This guy, some great quotes from this guy, H.L. Mencken. The men the American people admire most extravagantly are the greatest liars. The men they detest most violently are those who try to tell them the truth. Because people don't want to hear the truth. People don't want to hear the truth because the truth means we are responsible and therefore we have the power to change what we don't like. People don't want to feel they're responsible. They want someone else to blame so they can sit on their arse and watch EastEnders. This is Oscar Wilde, wonderful quote from Oscar Wilde. Most people are other people. Their thoughts are someone else's opinions, their lives are mimicry, their passions are quotation. In short, we are a world of repeaters, where people just repeat what someone else has said as if it's the truth without even checking it out. And no one should accept what I say here today without checking it out themselves, as they can. We have teacher repeaters. What do teachers do? They go through an education system that tells them what to think. If they repeat back on exam papers what the system has told them to believe, they progress and become teachers. They go to teacher training college. They learn more and they pass exams at teacher training college and they get told how to teach and what to teach. And then they go into schools and they tell the children of the next generation what the previous generation told them. And so it goes on. Repeaters. We call it education. We have doctor repeaters, repeating what the drug reps are telling them we should pop us down our throats because it's good for profits. I went to... I spoke years ago at the St Mary's, I think it's called, St Mary's Medical School in London, to medical students. If I went across there and talked to a wall, I'd probably get more response. These are kids, these are teenagers, already programmed that if it wasn't taught in the medical school, it can't be true. We have scientist repeaters that come up with this stuff about global warming. And what you find from the non-repeating scientists who are challenging global warming, when they start to publicly challenge it, miraculously their funding for their projects disappears. So if you're a song sheet scientist, you get well funded. Just like journalists who have been described as intellectual prostitutes, I would question the intellectual bit myself. So are most scientists, prostituting their outcome in line with the income in terms of the brown paper package and stuff. Repeater journalists. Anyone that's outside the bubble they're repeating is a nutter to be dismissed. Repeater politicians. I love this line. Been bent over so long they think it's standing up. If we had politicians who stood by their convenience, their conscience, who answered to their conscience only and not to a career massaging, yes sir, no sir, I'll vote this way even though I don't agree with it because it's good for my career politicians, then we'd have a decent parliament that represented the people. As it is, all you have to do in a political party is control the tiny few at the top, the Camerons, the Blairs, and the little few people around them. They dictate the policy, and then the other mass in the pyramid in the political party, the Tory politicians, the Republicans, the Democrats, the Labour politicians, they just trot through, yes, okay, I'll vote for it. All they have to do is decide the policy, and the policy's in overwhelmingly. This is how it works. And while this is going on, Big Brother unfolds so fast. As Mencken said, the most dangerous man to any government is the man who is able to think things out for himself. Almost inevitably, he comes to the conclusion that the government he lives under is dishonest, insane, and intolerable. And and it is to stop that awakening that limiting the debate on Big Brother is all about. Secret Agenda, the movie. Puppet People. Follow the White Rabbit. War is peace. Get a brain, morons. And then you can persuade people that war is peace, freedom is slavery, and ignorance is strength. And you can justify this as fighting for peace. You can say that this is bringing freedom to a people from a tyranny. No problem. Collateral damage, it says so here. But you don't want to see that. Shut up! Watch this! Watch this! Hey! Hey, quick, honey! She's going for the car! Liberated. 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 Hey, I think it's terrible that Janet Jackson, she showed her breast at the Super Bowl. I'm morally outraged. I wonder what should really morally outrage us. But we compartmentalize our minds, or so many people do, where they can't see the contradiction between worrying about someone's breast on television and some kid getting blown apart. The two sides never talk to each other, so they can't see the contradiction. Open minds. They talk to each other, so they can see the contradictions. As Gandhi said, what difference does it make to the dead, the orphans and the homeless, whether the mad destruction is wrought under the name of totalitarianism or the holy name of liberty and democracy? Still the same. This, depleted uranium babies in Iraq. Depleted uranium all over Iraq from the weapons dropped on Iraq, and that's what it's doing to children. But you don't want to see that. Hey, honey, quick! It's the Jerry Springer Show, and he's going to hit his girlfriend. Shut up! Watch this. Go about your business. Everything's fine. It's a mad world. Yes, it is. They want to turn us into robots, and they're doing so. And if anyone thinks that it's not possible, well, it is possible. It's been done before. They just want to do it on a mass scale. This is China today. Look at that. They are human beings. They could be free spirits. They could be all consciousness expressing itself in this reality. And look at them. Robots! And that's what they want us to be. Robots. With this acquiescence, this manipulation of the the laboratory maze I was talking about, by constantly giving us reasons to be punished and to fear. And then, I'm coming to an end now, but again, this is part of Big Brother. This is really part of Big Brother. The human body is an electrochemical organism, And if you destabilize it electrically or chemically, you stop that organism working to full capacity. And part of that capacity is emotional and mental sharpness and balance and equilibrium. So the more you pour chemical and electromagnetic, electrical pollution and disruptions into the electrochemical organism, the more you stop that manifesting its true potential for sharp thought and balanced emotion. When you look at the graphs for the increase in the crap they put into food, chemical concoctions and cocktails, overwhelmingly, though certainly not always, aimed at children, and then you look at the graph of the increase in so-called childhood behavior problems, they go up like they're connected by a magnet. There is a war on our children because they're the generation they overwhelmingly have to suppress. Aspartame is a sugar substitute. Have a look for this if you haven't come across it. It's in virtually everything now. And aspartame is a excitotoxin, they call it. It excites brain cells and destroys them. It stops the brain working efficiently. They sent letters out to naval pilots in America a few years ago telling them not to drink soft drinks with aspartame in before they fly because it affects their brain's ability to think and sharp. And who brought aspartame into existence? Donald Rumsfeld. He was head of Searle Pharmaceuticals. They couldn't get aspartame through the Food and Drug Administration checks in America to become part of, you know, the food that we eat and drink. And so they appointed him because he was close friends with the Reagan-Bush administration, and the Reagan-Bush administration changed the head of the Food and Drug Administration when he came in, and suddenly the checks were forgotten and aspartame came out. He then sold out to Monsanto at a vast profit, and Monsanto now control aspartame as they control GM food. Fluoride in the water is an excitotoxin. It excites brain cells, destroys them, and it suppresses thought. The first known time that fluoride was put into water supplies was in the Nazi concentration camps to keep the people docile. Genetically modified food is designed to genetically modify us. Vaccines, 25 vaccinations before the age of 2, with a growing still developing immune system. All the stuff they give us, electromagnetic soup, the rabbit hole is seriously deep. And this is so appropriate. This was said by a pastor after the Second World War, talking about Nazi Germany. He said, first they came for the Jews and I did not speak out because I was not a Jew. Then they came for the communists and I did not speak out because I was not a communist. Then they came for the trade unionists and I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for me, and by then there was no one left to speak out for me. And what they're doing is picking off different sections of society, and the other sections are saying, well, it doesn't affect me, not my problem. And eventually, enough sections are picked off for those that were looking the other way to be picked off also. That's how it is. Divide and rule. Not my problem. Well, it is our problem. Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. Martin Luther King. Absolutely it is. And what we need to do is stop making excuses. Oh, I don't know, world's coming to. Well, do something about it then, mate. All right? You know, the power is with us. Take it on a basic level. What we need is a mass non-cooperation, non-violent process of non-cooperation with that which wishes to enslave us. When someone gets fined for putting a wheelie bin out, if thousands and thousands of people put the wheelie bin out the wrong day, every week until the laws change, finish. Injustice anywhere is injustice everywhere, potentially, because next time it's going to be us. And it's a house of cards, this. It's held together. The power that is used to enslave us is the power we give to the enslavers every day. They don't have power. They have our power. We give it to them. It's time to take it back. And by that, it means unity. So we might have a different religion or no religion. So we might be a Jew or a Muslim or a Christian, or might be black or white or sky blue, bloody pink. This is not a Big Brother global agenda to enslave Jewish people or to enslave Islamic people or to enslave white people, middle class. It's a global agenda to enslave all of us. And if we don't unite and we go on being divided and ruled, then they will enslave all of us. If we unite, get rid of the nonsense fault lines of manufactured division. And then, through unity of response and non-cooperation with our own enslavement, they will not be able to do this. The key is to free our minds. We see the world like this. We need to see the... Oh, God, look at it. Free our minds. Einstein said, "You cannot solve problems with the same level of consciousness that created them." And that's what we do. We have a political consciousness which comes in under a Labour name or a Republican name, and then they're replaced by the same political consciousness called Conservatives or Democrats. And nothing changes because the same level of consciousness that created the problem has come in to carry on creating the problems. We've got to go to another level of consciousness beyond this nonsense, beyond this playpen. As Gandhi said, you must be the change you want to see in the world. We are the world. What else has created the world that we are looking at? We have, or we've allowed it to be created on our in our name. There is no path to peace. Peace is the path. We've got to stop fighting each other before we divided and ruled into total enslavement. And Martin Luther King said this: cowardice asked the question, is it safe? Expediency asked the question, is it politic? Vanity asked the question, is it popular? But conscience asked the question, is it right? And there comes a time when one must take a position that is neither safe nor politic nor popular, but one must take it because it is right. And we are there now. You know, when someone said to me, what would change the world quicker than anyone else? I would say this, or anything else, it would change overnight if we did this, because everything would come from it. If we stopped making decisions about our actions based on what is right for us in the moment and started doing what we knew to be right by conscience and justice, this world would transform. This world has been created as we experience it by billions of people deciding every day, what do I do in the interests of me? Once we start saying, what do I do in the interests of justice, fairness, and my own conscience, actions change, the world changes. And we are in control of that. And we are at a fork in the road now. Because Big Brother's on a motorbike now. This is not the totalitarian tiptoe anymore, this is the totalitarian sprint. And we have one last chance to open our eyes, open our minds, and start getting involved in doing something about this. Because, you know, there's going to come a time, and it ain't too long from now, when we're going to have to look our children in the face, in the eyes, and we're going to have to answer the question without blinking and without averting them. What were you doing, Daddy, Mummy, Granddad, Grandma, when the fascist state came in that now controls every facet of our lives, including our thoughts? What were you doing when it came in? Now, for what all my ills and all the rest of it, I won't have to blink. How many other people will be trying to look the other way? We have a chance now, still, not to be in that position. Because I'm 56, what have I got left? 10 years, 20 years, a bit longer maybe? The young people today, the kids today, the grandkids today, they're going to have to live their entire life in what these mad men want to introduce and are in the process of doing so fast. We owe it to them, if not to ourselves, not to leave them the design that these people have been working towards for so long. We need to get involved. And if we do, in a united way, the power they're using to enslave us will be gone. Thank you. Thank you very much.